our old friend Plutarch, who wrote the biography of Alexander the Great, reports that the head and hand of Crassus were brought to the Parthian king while he was watching a performance of the Bacchae by Euripides. In announcing the victory, the head of Crassus was thrown onto the stage. The story was meant to reflect the contrast between Greek and Roman cultures with the barbaric military practices in Asia. And you'll recall that the authors whose histories of Alexander survive are all Roman, and they all post-date this event. So this anecdote about what happened to a defeated Roman general when the Parthians captured him became a very memorable event in Rome. And when we read Roman histories of the East, we have to keep their cultural ideas of what happened in the East in mind as well. This anecdote also gives us a perspective on the cultural attitudes towards the Persians and Alexander's behavior as a Persian ruler, again, reflected by the Roman sources. Parthia was a challenging opponent for the Romans. Three times the Romans attacked and captured the capital at Ctesiphon in the 2nd century AD. And one of the reasons the Parthians were able to continue to defend themselves is because they had this flexible form of administration, and they could simply go to another capital if they needed to. In 197, however, the Roman emperor Septimius Severus sacked the city, and sources record that he killed the men and sold 100,000 of the surviving women and children into slavery. Mesopotamian sources have noted similar violence over the millennia that we've studied. City-states battled against each other in the 3rd millennium, hoping to gain additional agricultural lands to support the growing population in urban centers. The cities of Umma and Lagash, you might recall, fought over the land between their cities for generations. Conflicts spread in the early 2nd millennium. Hammurabi of Babylon created the first regional state of Babylonia by controlling the territory from southern Mesopotamia to Syria. And you might recall Zimri-Lim of Mari's worries about his one-time ally. And in fact, Hammurabi did attack Zimri-Lim and sack his palace. Warfare increased in scale and devastation under the Assyrians. They instituted, and the Persians continued, the practice of the deportation of entire communities from one part of their empire to another. To some extent, the changes in artistic styles help us follow the shifting populations of the Near East. If we return to the Parthians, a few decades after the Roman attack by Septimius Severus, they had another enemy to face, this time on their eastern borders. The Sasanians, another Iranian people, were the dominant power of the East for most of late antiquity. The first Sasanian ruler was crowned King of Kings in 226 AD in Ctesiphon, and the empire lasted until 651 AD. The Sasanians are often named as the last Persian Empire, an apt description considering the many traces of earlier Mesopotamian empires that we can find in their art. The most impressive and best-known works of Sasanian art are the rock reliefs, of which about 30 are known from the first 2 centuries of Sasanian rule. Many of them are clustered in the very spot chosen by Darius for his tomb at Naqshi Rustam. One depicts the first Sasanian king, Adashir I, receiving the office of kingship from a Sasanian deity. Both figures are on horseback, and Ardashir takes the diadem that indicates his office from the god. Kings and gods have often been linked in this course. The Sumerian King List, which supplied a history of the office, noted that kingship had been lowered from the heavens by the god Enlil. All of the rulers that we have studied were careful to set out evidence for their support by the gods. Military success was a sure sign of divine approval, and proper respect for temples was expected for rulers.